Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, May 7th, 2026. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined, Decatur Public School, Prep Students Strive to Excel. Academy's second cohort hits finish line in dual degree program, by Valerie Wells, Decatur. Cameron Johnson is tired. At the end of 4 years of Prep Academy, the MacArthur High School senior is still facing a couple of final exams. I'm excited, but my tiredness is kind of winning out right now, she said, chuckling. I'm kind of worn out right now, but I think tomorrow will make it real. I have a final due tonight, and Thursday is my last final, and when it's over, I can finally go home. Prep Academy is Decatur Public School's dual credit program, where high school students earn both a high school diploma and an associate's degree from Richland Community College. The workload is heavy and the pressure is on, but 34 students, 17 from each high school, made it through and will walk in graduation ceremonies at both their own high school and at Richland, proudly wearing their Prep Academy stoles. I still remember when the professors came to talk to us freshman year, Cameron said. And then in junior year, we started commuting out to college. The time has really gone quickly. I knew it was going to be hard. A lot of people came in thinking, oh, this is going to be the same as high school. And it wasn't. It was a lot harder. Cameron is part of Cohort 2, the second group to finish the program successfully. Cohort 6, this year's 8th graders, who will begin Prep Academy in the fall, were welcomed to the program at an event on Monday. All of the students who embark on the Prep Academy don't make it to the end. But last year's finish rate of 58% was surpassed by this year's rate of 62%, said Ashley Grained, Executive Director of Strategic Planning and Innovative Programs, who initiated the program 6 years ago. You have worked so hard to be here, Grained said to the students as they rehearsed on Tuesday for the ceremony at the banquet. It is my honor to celebrate with you. Students who successfully complete the program not only have a leg up on college credits and save tuition they'd have to spend for those 2 years of college, but they learn to manage their time, tackle a tough academic program, and find out they are capable of more than they realized, said Isaac Zuniga, Executive Vice President of Academic and Student Success at Richland. The skills they acquire during their 4 years of Prep Academy give them motivation and drive that other students their age might not have. Many can enter their college or university as juniors and are still eligible for a full 4 years of financial aid. We feel so privileged and honored to have provided not just the opportunity, but access to completion of a 2-year degree, Zuniga said. Our partnership with DPS 61 has been phenomenal. The 8th graders come into the high school transition without knowing what they want to do, and they get an opportunity to take college classes their freshman year. And as they move through that process, the first 2 years in high school and the next 2 years with us, and it's awesome to see access and opportunity and completion made, and we've impacted 34 different lives. It's amazing the impact we can have on the community. It was really hard, but it was also really rewarding, getting my associates and saving so much money, said Sully Kahn, a senior at MacArthur. There were a lot of struggles, but I feel glad that they found a way to get us here. This article is accompanied by a full-color photo attributed to Valerie Wells' Herald and Review, and it's captioned, Richland Community College's Isaac Zuniga practices presenting a Prep Academy stole to MacArthur High School senior Brielle Betts during a rehearsal for the Prep Academy's end-of-year banquet. Elections, how Remap Fight cut voters from tight races. Competitive House districts were already at historic lows before Supreme Court ruling, by Joseph Axe, Reuters. The number of competitive U.S. House of Representatives districts in this fall's midterm elections was already near historic lows before the U.S. Supreme Court's decision last week opened the door to even more aggressive efforts to draw district lines for political gain. The court's ruling, which arrived amid what was already an unprecedented national fight over congressional redistricting, may usher in a new era of nakedly partisan gerrymandering that results in still fewer competitive elections, leaving voters with less power than ever, experts said. The lack of competitive races means that control of the U.S. House of Representatives will likely be determined in November's midterm election by fewer than 10% of Americans, with the winners in the vast majority of districts all but assured before a single ballot is cast, a Reuters analysis found. Only 32 of the House's 435 seats are currently considered competitive, according to the analysis. Those districts were rated either toss-ups or leaning toward Democrats or Republicans by three leading independent forecasters: Cook Political Report, the University of Virginia's Crystal Ball, and Inside Elections. Most other districts are simply out of play. Cook, for instance, rates 375 seats, more than 85% of the House, as either solid Republican or solid Democrat, which means its analysts do not expect them to be seriously contested. Another 28 races are likely Republican or Democratic, according to Cook, meaning they are not competitive at present, but might become so under new conditions. This year boasts the fewest competitive House races at this stage of the election cycle since at least 2008, according to an archive of prior Cook ratings. Democrats need to gain just three seats to win a House majority, giving them the power to block President Donald Trump's legislative agenda and initiate investigations into his administration. The shrinking House battlefield is the result of several factors, including increased political polarization. But the weaponization of congressional redistricting, or gerrymandering, which has gone into overdrive since last year when Trump began pushing Republicans to draw new maps, is a critical element that is only going to accelerate after the Supreme Court's ruling, according to experts. "We are now in a cycle of gerrymandering wars," said Justin Levitt, a professor at Loyola Law School, who maintains the website All About Redistricting. "What used to be a cold war has gotten very hot." The court hollowed out a provision of the Federal Voting Rights Act that had blocked state legislatures from dismantling districts with mostly racial minority voters. Political observers expect Republican-led states to target a dozen or more Democratic-held majority Black and majority Latino seats that previously enjoyed stauncher protections. "I think it gets worse before it gets better," Levitt said, "and I think there's plenty of room for it to get worse." The lack of competitive districts can have consequences for Congress, said Matthew Klein, a House analyst with Cook. "If House candidates only need to appeal to their base voters to win elections rather than moderates or members of the opposing party, they are more likely to move toward the extremes instead of the political middle. If you look at Congress and how it acted 20 years ago, 30 years ago, even farther back, you see a Congress that is both less acrimonious and also more productive," he said. "There used to be bills that passed with huge majorities on major issues. We just don't really see that anymore." Gerrymandering has long been a feature of American democracy, but the practice has been supercharged in recent years as guardrails, both legal and institutional, have been torn down. In 2019, the Supreme Court found that while partisan gerrymandering may be undemocratic, federal courts had no role in regulating it. Last year, Trump successfully pressured Texas Republicans to rip up their map and draw a new one targeting five Democratic incumbents, triggering a nationwide arms race that spread to nearly a dozen other states. That move eviscerated what had been a traditional norm limiting most redistricting to the start of each decade, after the U.S. Census population count is completed. The Supreme Court's ruling on Wednesday, meanwhile, has given even more leeway to lawmakers to draw districts for their party's benefit, And all of those developments have come against a backdrop of technological advances, with map makers able to identify Democratic and Republican voters down to the census block. If there are no guardrails, there are no guardrails, Levitt said. I think the constraint is now real politic and imagination, not we just don't do that. Gerrymandering is not the only culprit to blame for the lack of competitive districts. Voters have become more geographically sorted, as rural areas have trended conservative, while suburban regions have moved left. And just as House members have become more polarized, so too have voters. Split-ticket voting, in which voters choose a candidate of one party for a higher office and another for a lower office, was once fairly common, but no longer. In 2000, there were 86 House members elected whose districts voted for the opposing party's presidential candidate, according to research by Kyle Condick, the managing editor of Crystal Ball. In 2024, that number was down to 16. Congress. Online betting scandals are getting worse, by Zachary Schermelli, USA Today, Washington. As scandals continue to plague popular online betting platforms, calls to intervene grow louder within Congress. Controversies last month, from political candidates profiting from their own campaigns to a soldier's alleged bet on a major military operation, prompted a unanimous April 30th decision to change the Senate's rules. Senators and their staff members were banned from trading on prediction markets, where people can buy and sell bets online on future events. Senator John Curtis, Republican, Utah, vowed that it was just the beginning of a new wave of federal scrutiny. Next on the legislative agenda, he said, would be prohibiting all government officials from using insider information to bet on prediction market contracts. It should be everybody, Senator James Lankford, Republican, Oklahoma, told USA Today, starting with members of Congress. Arkansas Representative French Hill, the Republican chairman of his chamber's Financial Services Committee, said the House of Representatives is looking at prohibitions for its lawmakers, similar to what the Senate passed. He expects the executive branch to review its rules, too. Bills were introduced in recent months seeking to rein in the platforms, yet a complicated legal and political landscape lies ahead. States and tribal governments are in an ongoing battle with a federal agency about who has the primary authority to regulate the entities. Congress, hampered by GOP infighting, struggled lately to do even basic legislating, let alone add more to its plate. And President Donald Trump's complicated ties to the industry won't make pursuing regulatory efforts easier. Still, Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat, Connecticut, said there's a good chance Congress will get more involved on the issue. Prediction markets cry out for some kind of legislative intervention, he said. Spokespeople for Kalshi and Polymarket, the two biggest prediction markets, pointed to online statements in support of banning lawmakers from inside trading on their platforms, which they said is already prohibited. Polymarket technically prohibits Americans from using its main platform, but many users find creative ways to appear online as if they're outside the United States, which presented a big problem for federal regulators. A rocky month for prediction markets. In the first week of April, Polymarket was forced to publicly apologize for allowing users to place bets on the fates of two U.S. pilots after their jet crashed in Iran. Representative Seth Moulton, Democrat, Massachusetts, who first brought attention to the incident on social media, called it disgusting. On April 22nd, Kalshi fined and suspended three political candidates from its platform for trying to gain financially from their own primary campaigns. One of the candidates, Virginia's Mark Moran, said he bet on himself jumping in the race for Senate because he wanted to get caught and expose how Kalshi is rife with corruption. A day later, the Department of Justice accused an Army soldier of illegally profiting off the capture of ousted Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. The soldier, Gannon Ken Van Dyke, participated in the planning for Maduro's capture and allegedly made more than $400,000 by betting on the timing of the operation. He pleaded not guilty to insider trading charges. The incident was a definite national security threat, said Blumenthal, a Marine Corps veteran. Regulatory fight. One of the biggest barriers to further regulating prediction markets is a fight over who has power over them. The federal government says it's the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. The CFTC typically has a bipartisan five-person commission. But in a historic shift, since Trump's return to the White House, it has only one, a chairman named Michael Selig. Though Selig said he's committed to preventing insider trading, his tone toward prediction markets was less aggressive. We're not a merit policeman that picks and chooses which contracts people should or should not be able to trade, he said recently. States and tribal governments seek to take enforcement actions against prediction markets. They became involved in dozens of lawsuits against the CFTC since last year, arguing they have authority over platforms that, in their view, are essentially forms of gambling. The high-stakes questions at the center of the swarm of litigation ultimately may end up before the Supreme Court. The Trump factor. Trump's close connections to the industry also muddles efforts in Congress to crack down on prediction markets. While Trump said he's not happy with any of that stuff, his own son, Donald Trump Jr., served as an advisor to Kalshi and Polymarket. Truth Social, the president's social media company, even launched a feature last year called Truth Predict. All those ties don't seem to have blinded the president to the online betting world's ills, which he lamented recently to reporters. The whole world, unfortunately, has become somewhat of a casino, he said. Man accused of threatening child. Cops say suspect struck another man with the handle of a knife. By Danette Beckett, Decatur. A Decatur man remains jailed after police say he threatened a child and struck another person. Brett A. German, 46, of Decatur, was charged in Macon County Circuit Court with aggravated battery with a deadly weapon and aggravated battery in a public place. He was denied pretrial release during a Tuesday court appearance. Decatur police officers were dispatched at approximately 8:27 p.m. Monday to the 800 block of West Williams Street to reports of an unlawful use of a weapon. According to an affidavit, the original caller reported her juvenile child entered the home in a state of panic after being chased by a man with what appeared to be a long, sharp knife. Another call was made to the police in reference to a man chasing another man with what appeared to be a long knife. During their investigation, officers made contact with a 37-year-old man with a bleeding 1-inch laceration above his left eyebrow, who said he had been battered. The man said he was walking his dog in the 600 block of West Williams Street when a man approached him and stated something like, "You're going to die." He was then struck one time with the handle end of an apparent knife. The affidavit said officers later observed German near the intersection of West William and North Pine Streets holding what appeared to be a long knife. The affidavit said German ran to the front door of a house in the 700 block of West William Street and entered. Officers then observed German open the door while holding the long blade and dropping it. Officers observed the apparent knife to be a hand-style saw with a green and black handle and having an approximate 18-inch saw blade, the affidavit stated. German was taken into custody after the victim identified him as his attacker, the affidavit said. News in brief. Scholarship honors St. Teresa Chief, Decatur. St. Teresa High School has established a scholarship in honor of retiring administrator Kenneth Hendrickson. During a Legacy of Leadership event on May 1st to honor Hendrickson, $27,100 was raised for the scholarship, and donations can be made at stteresa.org. The scholarship will help students pay tuition to attend the school. During his time at St. Teresa, Hendrickson led efforts to create a number of campus improvements, including a chapel, cafeteria, kitchen, classrooms, and office on the south end of the building, while on the north end, changes include a weight room, locker room, and offices. On the east side of the school, St. Teresa has an artificial turf football and soccer field, an 8-lane track in St. Teresa colors, and home stands and press box. Fan drive scheduled for May 15th. Decatur. A fan drive will be held from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Friday, May 15th, at the Walmart North location. New box fans will be accepted during this event. After the fan drive, donations will be accepted at the Scoville Park West Activity Center, 3909 West Main Street, Decatur. Fans, as well as monetary donations, can be dropped off at the Activity Center anytime after the fan drive. The fans will be distributed to those in need beginning Monday, May 18th. Women's mini golf event postponed. Decatur. The women's mini golf event, playing 5-9, has been rescheduled for May 21st at the Overlook Adventure Park in Nelson Park. The original date was Thursday, May 7th. Due to the possibility of bad weather, the Decatur Park District has postponed the event. The event will still be from 5-9. Tickets are $40. Certain holes will offer special treats, drinks, and appetizers. Vendors and other prizes will be available at the park during the event. For more information or to purchase tickets for the new date, visit decatur-parks.org. 38 Special to play free show at State Fair, Springfield. Southern rock band 38 Special will perform a free concert at the Illinois State Fair Grandstand on Monday, August 17th. 38 Special has performed for more than 5 decades, bringing their signature guitar-driven Southern rock music around the world, according to a news release. Hits include Hold On Loosely, Caught Up In You, Rockin' Into the Night, If I'd Been the One, and Second Chance. The Illinois State Fair is one of the best opportunities we have each year to bring people together from every corner of our state, said Governor J.B. Pritzker in a prepared statement. Offering a free grandstand concert like this ensures more families can be part of the experience and enjoy everything the fair has to offer. The band has sold more than 20 million albums and continues to tour nationwide, drawing fans of all generations. 38 Special's shows are described as high-energy performances, showcasing the band's timeless sound and unique style, according to the news release. We're always looking for ways to enhance the value of a day at the fair, said Jerry Costello II, Illinois Department of Agriculture director, in a news release. Bringing in a band with the legacy and energy of 38 Special for a free show is a great way to make the grandstand accessible and memorable for everyone. Gates for the show will open at 7 p.m. and no tickets are required. Attendees will be subjected to security screening. The 2026 fair will run from August 13th to 23rd at the fairgrounds in Springfield. Other headlining acts include Bailey Zimmerman on August 14th, Lainey Wilson on August 15th, Matchbox 20 on August 16th, Ella Langley on August 21st, The Chicks on August 22nd, and Shinedown on August 23rd. U.S. History, Eastward Bound. Massive World War II steam train on tour for nation's 250th birthday, by Trevor Hughes, USA Today. The world's largest steam train is heading east across the Mississippi River to help celebrate America's 250th birthday. The train, officially known as Big Boy No. 4014 will make a 10-state swing starting in late May. Wartime hauler. Delivered to Union Pacific in 1941, the locomotive was among 25 built to haul wartime freight across the Continental Divide in Wyoming and Utah. Big Boy is the last one running, and in the 1960s was converted to burn oil instead of coal. Union Pacific couldn't be prouder to share this powerful piece of history with the nation and to be part of America's birthday celebration, Union Pacific CEO Jim Venna said in a statement. By the numbers, Big Boy is 133 feet long and weighs 1.2 million pounds. It traveled more than 1 million miles during its working life, hauling freight between Cheyenne and Ogden, Utah. On tour, the ground-shaking locomotive already did a western swing through California from its home base in Cheyenne, Washington. It will head east on May 25th, the first time it will cross the Mississippi River since its westward delivery run in 1941, according to railroad officials. Big Boy will make the following stops. May 30th, Omaha, Nebraska, home of Union Pacific's headquarters. June 3rd, West Chicago, Illinois. June 10th, Buffalo, New York. June 15th through 16th, Scranton, Pennsylvania. July 4th through 5th, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. July 9th through 10th, Altoona, Pennsylvania. July 14th, Fostoria, Ohio. July 19th, St. Louis, Missouri. Other public viewing opportunities posted on the Union Pacific website, up.com, which also provides a real-time location tracker and other details. 250 America. America at 250. The story still unfolding. This story is part of an ongoing series exploring the 250th anniversary of the U.S. in 2026. Visit our website to read other stories in the series and share your own. This story is accompanied by a very dramatic photo of Big Boy and is captioned, "The Big Boy number 4014 is the world's largest operating steam locomotive, Union Pacific." We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, May 7th, 2026. Please stay tuned.